The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
All right, ladies and gentlemen around the Delaware Valley, welcome to the Pearson Coucher Show on WWDB 860 AM, the American Justice Radio Network, sponsored by Weinemann Pain and Wellness, serious doctors for serious injuries. We got a great show for everybody today. As everybody knows, we're all doing what we have to do during these very uncertain times. The show must go on, and that is the beauty of talk radio. I want to welcome in our host, John Coucher. How are you, sir?
Joe, I'm doing as well as can be expected. I'm sitting in my home office in my car, where I get the most privacy. And I can talk on the phone. I can talk on the phone with nobody bothering me.
You know, it's interesting. So we all are. We're all, you know, I'm in my own studio, and we've been doing the shows remotely, and in some industries, you know, like the ones we're in, it's possible to work remotely, and so although not the same as being in the studio, and certainly, you know. Not the most ideal circumstances. You know, feel fortunate that this can actually be done. If you would tell the listeners, you know, about your day now. The legal field has. I've had some attorneys tell me that it's almost like they've been. You know, the field has been preparing for something like this, so it has adapted well. Although not everything is. You know, the same. Tell us, you know, what your day looks like on a normal day today, obviously, as compared to prior to the quarantine.
Yeah, so I think that's it's an interesting question, Joe. I can split it up between personal and business. So if we start with personal, because that affects just the way you go through your day. I mean, we all have lives, and the personal affects that life. So I'm married. I have a wife. She works. She's working from home remotely, and I have three kids. I'm lucky because my youngest is 12, and he can fend for himself mostly. I feel for the working people that have very, very young kids that were in daycare or kindergarten or preschool, and they really have to figure out how to manage their time during the day so they can work. And we have staff in our office that have to juggle very young children at home with their responsibilities at work. So my youngest is in school until 12. It's an abridged schedule online, and it seems to be working well. And then I have two college-age kids that came home, and it is literally like two kids coming from a planet that's not Earth. You know, they act differently. They act differently. They speak differently. They don't know what it's like anymore you know, just have family time, and they're just not used to it. They miss their friends. Their social life was turned upside down. They're now taking classes online. But what's interesting is that it's almost like Lord of the Flies. And everybody sort of figured out personally on a daily basis what they had to do to survive and what they needed to get through the day. And I'm the same way. So I have found quiet places in my house to work. I'm working from early in the morning until just before dinner time. You know, I'm on my cell phone constantly when it's nice out. I'm sitting outside, returning calls, you know, preparing for hearings and depositions, which we can talk about how that's going. Just finding quiet places so, you know, I can get through the day and do what I have to do. But you know, the beauty of the workers' compensation system is about I don't know, 5 years ago, they started a new online system called Wikis, W-C-A-I-S. And it was met with a lot of frustration in the beginning because it was a state-run platform that had a lot of issues. But over time, the kinks got ironed out. And the beauty of it is it's an online portal that manages the state's workers' compensation system. So it has every case, every hearing, every judge, every contact. It manages your case flow. And that's been a guiding light throughout this pandemic because the computer system is up and running. The judges are able to communicate through the computer platform. We have telephonic hearings. We have Skype hearings. Cases are moving. Depositions are ongoing by phone. We're uploading exhibits and briefs for the judges through this online portal. We're getting decisions. The workers' comp system, remarkably, has really not skipped a beat. So, you know, when I combine the personal with the business, in the beginning it was a little rocky. I think we're all in a good place, at least in my household. Our firm is running on all cylinders. You know, look, if it wasn't for such a tragic, tragic situation with the virus, I would say this is just an amazing example of how individuals and businesses are shifting with the paradigm.
You know, it's amazing because that's exactly, you know, how I feel. And, you know, I mean, we happen to be in industries that are adaptable. But like you said, if it wasn't for the devastating virus and the fact that we all know so many people out there, I was in the nightlife industry for 15 years, Mike, which means restaurant and you know, nightclub and lounge. And my heart bleeds for those people because I know what they're going through. And so we know from where we're sitting, you know, that, you know, that's the elephant in the room. That's the cloud over everybody's head. We're in adaptable industries. It's interesting what you said about your kids because, you know, when, you know, you know, we always joke around the kids go to college and then they come back and, you know, during spring break, you don't see them. It's like no other time ever where they've come back, yet they're quarantined. So it's not like, you know, they're back from school and it's odd, but, you know, hey, you know, they're going out and seeing their high school friends and all that. That's not happening. They've come home and their worlds are, I'm not going to say, they're just changed. It's a totally foreign, completely foreign situation because after they're done their online courses, I guess normally they would be able to go out and see their friends, but they can't. And so it's a very, very unique situation. You know, my son, who's, you know, out of college and he manages a restaurant bar, and it's a very difficult situation, but he doesn't live at home anymore, but he can't just regularly drop by. So it's a totally unique situation. And like you said, it, you know, with communication in regards to technology in workers' comp, it's almost seamless. And you know, it's obviously a blessing to be able to be able to still provide outstanding representation. And so certainly, you know, there's no question we're fortunate that way, and injured workers as well. What we're going to do, John, and I'm going to say to the listeners that we're going to be on, you know, remotely. So we're literally doing the show from you know, we're calling into the station. We're going to go to a short break. We're going to bring Mark Levithan in to the conversation of our sponsor, Weinemann Pain and Wellness, in order to talk about, you know, what the medical side is doing right now. There's so many people that are injured, and, you know, they need their treatment. And a lot of them are your clients, John. And so we're gonna have that discussion when we come back with John Coucher after the break.
My friends, this is Joe Krause. You've heard me on Philadelphia radio now for over 20 years, and you know I don't often endorse products or people. unless they are real game changers. I want to tell you about Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located in Center City, Philadelphia. And at the end of this short personal endorsement, I want you to consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness. If you are recovering from an injury, if you or a family member has been diagnosed with a disorder that has stopped you in your tracks, or if you're like me, determined to learn about wellness while getting yourself prepared to stay healthy so you can enjoy the blessings of your family. Remember the name of this warm and caring location, Weinerman Pain and Wellness. Why should you consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness? Because they are who you expect them to be.
Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located at 1617 John F. Kennedy Boulevard, Suite 1100, Philadelphia, PA 19103. Call Weinerman Pain and Wellness at 215-988-9503. That's 215-988-9503. Call today.
It's Thursday night, and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody, squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car, which, if you're buzzed... could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
My name is Sue Smith. I'm 38 years old, and I work at a graphic design company. Which is funny, because I couldn't even draw a stick figure when I was a kid. But I met someone who told me, you know what? You can do anything if you really want to. And if the teenage me were here, she'd tell you,
I wouldn't be into drawing and art if it wasn't for big brothers, big sisters. Most kids from my neighborhood don't get into art. They get into trouble. But I was lucky because my big sister showed me early on that I didn't have to be like most people. And to the young me,
that meant a lot. My big sister's name is Sheila. And Sheila is the reason that this 8-year-old grows up to have an amazing job as a graphic designer.
Whether you donate money or time, you're helping big brothers, big sisters help a child. And that can last a lifetime. Start something today at bigbrothersbigsisters.org. Brought to you by Big Brothers Big Sisters and the Ad Council.
They just told us right away that we're going to house you, we're going to feed you, and every single one of his medical bills is just all taken care of.
They've saved my family from financial ruin. It allowed me and my wife both to focus on the most important thing, which was the health and well-being of our son.
We have phenomenal research, outstanding clinical care, and the generosity of public, which allow us to treat patients regardless of what it takes. And that's what makes St. Jude so magical.
At St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, families never receive a bill for treatment, travel, housing, or food, because the only thing a family should worry about is helping their child live.
Doctors send us the toughest cases to be treated at St. Jude, and our patients come from all over the world.
When we come here, they told me, don't worry, everything's been taken care of.
We could never repay St. Jude for what they've given us.
Because of you.
Gracias a ti.
Because of you.
There is St. Jude.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Pearson Coucher Show on the American Justice Radio Network, sponsored by Weinerman Pain and Wellness. There's doctors for serious injuries. I want to go to our host, John Coucher, before we bring Mark Levithan into the program. John, you're dealing with injured workers and clients that there's two sides to their coin. There's their case, their injury case, since they got injured on the job, and they're dealing with legal issues that that you handle on the front lines, but they also have to treat, and they have medical conditions, and so it's a two-sided coin. And it's important for them to for two reasons, to be compliant with their medical treatment. A, because they got an injury, and a lot of those injuries, obviously, in order for them to heal properly and actually heal at all, they need treatment. And at the same time, compliance is important, because if you're not treating, you're not injured. So, you know, what's that been like, you know, these days when people are on quarantine?
Yeah, it's been challenging. It's certainly on the minds of our clients. You know, one of the silver linings is that myself and the other six lawyers in my firm, we've all had an opportunity to reconnect with our clients and have meaningful conversations with them as things have developed, you know, just to make sure clients know that we're here, we're working, because they have concerns and fears as well. And certain clients will go for treatment during this time. They are working at facilities that have protocols in place where they can get treatment. Some clients are doing home exercises, and then they have video conferencing, telemedicine with their physician once a month or so. But, you know, the judges that I've been speaking to understand that this is just a pause, and they know that lack of treatment right now does not equate with full recovery or nothing wrong. That's not synonymous right now. It's more of an overall health and safety issue. And so I think as we get through this, as the areas reopen and medical practices reopen, I think some clients may still be hesitant to get treatment right away. We're just going to have to wait and see. I think clients are doing the best they can.
And so, you know, it's such a big part of their case and of their physicality. I'd like to bring in Mark Levithan, who's the practice manager at Weinemann Pain and Wellness, our sponsor for this broadcast. Ask Mark, first of all, Mark, how are you, sir?
I'm great. Joe, how's yourself?
I am doing well. Can't wait till we can all get back into the studio. But, you know, happy to have this discussion. Tell us what's going on at Weinemann Pain and Wellness right now. And in relation to the conversation, obviously, we're having with John Couch here, because, you know, you're treating injured workers and injury victims during this quarantine. Tell us how it's going and tell us what you're doing.
You know, first of all, let me say hello to John. How are you? Hope you and
Mark,
your family.
I'm well. Yeah, thanks, good. Mark. Nice to hear your voice.
Yeah, good to hear yours too. And you know, as John was saying, you know, these are extremely trying times, both from a side of actual people literally getting sick to major emotional stress situations where people psychologically are being affected from staying at home, from being afraid to go out, and how to be dealing with this epidemic, which is what it is, you know, on a grand scale. And you know, just to go over what John said, I agree with John, where you're going to have patients that want to come in and want to be treated, okay, that they're in pain, they need treatment, and they're struggling with the fact of, you know, should they come into a facility, is it the right time, what to do. So what we've done, we actually had a meeting early this morning with all of my staff, and all of our providers, and, you know, we have about 30 people that work at our facility. And, you know, we talked about, first of all, number one, that safety for our patients and our staff is paramount. So that's condition number one. And we've set our facility up where we are seeing patients. Plenty of attorneys are sending their patients to us. The people who are working, there are still people that are getting hurt. We're getting new work coming in, and we're also taking care of our existing patients. Our facility's been set up where we have the patients set up where we're only taking, you know, five patients per half hour now. So they're totally segregated. They're away from each other. We have every type of thing there for them. We provide masks for the patients. We provide all different type of, sanitary and you know, sanitizer for them, where they can get washed. All of our providers are clothed correctly, wearing shields, wearing face masks. So we're doing everything possible to try not to have anyone get sick from either a patient to a provider or provider to a patient. And the staff has really adapted this pretty well. Now, we do have patients that do not want to come in, just as John said. So, you know, I said just explain that to their attorney, and we'll talk to the attorney, such as John, and we'll tell them what's going on, that at this point, psychologically, your patient has a fear to come in and be treated, and we'll put that on a hiatus, and we'll do home programs with them for exercise instead of coming in for physical therapy at our facility. We also are doing telemedicine, and also, as John stated before, we are doing plenty of depositions right now through either Zoom or through just a telephone call, which is being handled correctly through our physicians, our attorneys, and the defense counsels. So we're doing the best we can, and it's been working pretty well for us, to be honest with you.
You know, it's interesting. You talk about the sentiments of clients, and let's not forget, Mark, it's interesting in regards to your situation. The protocols you have put in regards to, the staff and the clients coming in to protect them, because all that, and at the same time, we're doing everything we can, to make sure that, that our employees are, safe and all those things. But what, and I'll transition to John, the sentiments of your clients, how important has communication been, because it's an uncertain time. And I think the longer we get into this thing, you got people wanting to go back to work and do all those things. So the natural fears come in, let alone money and all those other things. But when you're injured on the job, and you're out of work, a lot of your clients and a lot of everybody's clients may have, spouses that may be working that can carry the load while they're going through their injury, which is scary enough. However, during this time, a lot of people have, spouses that are not working as well. Obviously they're working the unemployment out and all those things, but what have the sentiments been from your clients, John, and how important has it been to communicate with them since day one of this thing?
Right. So early on, my partner Eric and I, we recognized that, once Governor Wolf essentially shut down the state and only essential businesses would remain open, we recognized that client communication was going to be paramount. So every lawyer has their case list. Every lawyer reached out to clients, not just once, but on a weekly basis. And what I found is that clients were thrilled to hear from their lawyer, even if it was just a message that, hello, how are you? I'm here if you need anything. That was comforting, and it just gave our clients peace of mind. Clients, some are scared. Some are just happy to be home, not exposed to the work environment if their job was an essential employer. We have clients that work in factories where their coworkers are still working. They're not given masks, gloves. They're not social distancing. There are clear OSHA and state violations that are ongoing in some of these industries. And, ironically, for somebody who, it was a terrible situation to be out of work, whether you're injured or fighting to get benefits or injured and on workers' compensation, that's the safest place to be right now. So the emotions run the gamut. Sometimes it's as simple as a client knowing that their workers' compensation check is going to continue. We had a lot of those calls. Sometimes it's as simple for a client to know that you're home but working. Sometimes it's as simple for a client to know that they can still get their medicine And treatment, as Mark said, clients are people. Clients have a whole broad spectrum of emotions. But Pearson Coucher, we've done an amazing job connecting with our clients, communicating with them, and making sure that they know that, that whatever they need, we are here for them.
Mark, you know, you're dealing with the clients also, and obviously providing treatment and obviously compliance is important, but you're dealing with different sentiments as well. How do they react? Obviously, you know, you talk about how you set the place up in regards to, you know, the social distancing and all, and tell us how the clients have reacted to that during this difficult and scary time.
Sure. Well, like I said before, and hats off to John, first of all, for how you're communicating with your clients. I think that's great, and I think there's a major psychological issue where they want to be touched and felt and feel secure at this time, because a lot of people really aren't secure. So I think that's really important, John. And we're doing the same thing with ours. But what we're doing is, when we make appointments with our patients at this point, we're making specific appointments where we would just have people come in, because we have a pretty large facility. We have over 13,500 square feet, so we can handle quite a volume of patients. But now, due to the conditions, okay, we want to make sure that social distancing and safety is paramount, as we said. So we make an appointment with them, and we bring them in, because we do provide transportation for our patients. Also, as we bring them in, we only put one person in a car at this point, okay, because we don't want anybody to be near each other. So you know, just so that you'll understand it, we want to make sure from the time they leave their house till they get home, they're safe. Once they come in, we do a questionnaire, and we talk about, first of all, they have to be on time for their appointments, because we don't want to have too many people at one time. So we do section them off time-wise. We're said we're only bringing in five per half hour. We then question them and make sure that they haven't been around anybody with COVID-19, that then either family been sick, have they had a temperature, yada, yada, yada. Go through this complete questionnaire, no different than a hospital would. So after that, we also take their temperature as they enter the door. So anybody that has a temperature will be refused treatment. It's not that we want to refuse them treatment, but we're doing it for their safety and for the safety of our employees. Not only are we doing the temperature of the patients, but we're taking the temperatures of every employee as soon as they come in the morning. They're all recorded, they're dated. So we're doing everything possible to try to keep as safe as possible. The waiting room, we've taken many chairs out of our waiting room, so people sit, is, you know, 6 to 8 feet apart from each other. We've conditioned the bathrooms that only one person can go in at a time, and certain bathrooms are off limits because we have multiple bathrooms. And we try to keep them spaced out. We put X's on our floor so they know where they can walk. We put out tons of sanitizer, hand washing stations, everything possible. Also, once a patient is treated, we want them to know that after that patient is treated, any piece of equipment that they've touched, any table, any modality, whatever they've used, is totally sanitized, okay, with Lysol, Clorox wipes, and a very heavy disinfecting type of cleansing material, so that patients do not have to worry that they will be treated on the same facility or surface that the last patient was there. So we're doing everything we possibly can to make it as safe as possible, Joe and John.
You know, it's interesting. I say that because when I go food shopping, and I don't know how you guys feel, but it's the most stressful part of the week, okay? So my wife and I are wearing masks, or, you know, your nose is, you know, itching, you can't touch anything. And you go in, and, you know, most of the ShopRite, Acme, you know, Whole Foods, they're not even, you know, I mean, obviously they're not nearly as crowded. They're social distancing. I was at one food store last week where, when I came out, there was a line down the street in the parking lot and everybody was spread out. It was like 100 yards long. When we went in, it wasn't. But my point is, you are, you know, and when you leave, you're throwing the gloves away. It's, and then, you know, you got the wonder, like, okay, you're tracking your, you know, your steps down to making sure that obviously, you know, you did everything you possibly could to avoid this thing. To me, you know, I say this not only, I mean, I'm not just saying this, to hear you say that, it's a comforting thought process, Mark, because all these things we're talking about, protecting people, doing all these things, and John, you know, you deal with a workers' compensation entity, the work comp providers, the insurance companies that are not forgiving. Now, I know that, you know, and we're going to talk about the work comp side of things, you know, in a couple minutes. But, you know, all those things and these individuals, a lot of them are going to treatment and they have to, you know, go to treatment during this time. It's got to be a soothing effect to know when you go to especially a place to treat, that people are taking those kind of precautions, because I go to the shopping center and I try not to touch anything. And at the same time, it's uncertain. So, Mark, you know, are you getting a good sentiment with these people? In other words, that they feel comfortable they're coming back because they know that you're taking every precaution possible to keep them safe?
Look, I know what we're doing there, and I can tell you that the patients that are coming in are very pleased. They're very comfortable. They feel secure. And we've had so many attorneys that are actually, you know, we can only control Weinerman and Pain and Wellness. I would hope that every facility would be doing what we do. But some people aren't set up for it the way we are. Some people don't have the staff we do. Some people don't have the different type of available sanitizing things and different equipment that we have. So we've had plenty of attorneys that have actually taken their clients that we're treating in another facility and have referred them to us because of the job we're doing. So I always say hats off to my employees, because they're doing such a great job that attorneys are actually taking actual patients and referring them back to us where they're not getting the same treatment elsewhere.
And let's go in, John, let's go into, the workers themselves. Okay. You have your essential workers, you have your non-essential workers now, and there's a slew of law that I'm sure is going to come into effect after this thing in regards to, you know, why would you have a client who's all of a sudden a non-essential worker? Well, you know, that's an employment issue and there's a lot of situations there, so that's another conversation. Having said that, let's talk about the essential workers. Mark, your place is an essential workplace. The hospitals are essential workplaces. Across the board, we all know who the heroes work in food stores, for crying out loud. What happens, John, if somebody's working in an essential workplace and they contract the virus? Is that a workers' compensation claim?
Mark, that's a great question, and I was hoping that you would segue into that. We've received a ton of calls for workers who are either in essential or non-essential jobs that have either gotten sick with the virus or are simply scared to go back to work for fear of exposure to the virus. And one of the hard parts of analyzing these cases is that there's no direction right now from the court system and the legislature of our state government as to how they will treat these types of cases. So what my partner Eric and I decided is that, yes, there will be claims for COVID-19, but we have to take the claims on a case-by-case basis. And if you are an essential worker, and the ones that come to mind are the ones that we all talk about, first responders, hospital staff, grocery store workers, pharmacy workers.
Bus drivers,
thank you. And even perhaps delivery food workers. If somebody in one of those occupations contracts the virus, we will absolutely file a claim alleging that it is either an injury under the Workers' Compensation Act or it is an injury under the Occupational Disease Act, which is essentially the same thing but runs a little differently. What myself and other members of the claimant or injured workers bar are hoping for is some type of legislation that I know there's a bill right now in the State House or the Senate, I'm not positive which one, which talks about what happens if an essential worker, a first responder, contracts COVID-19. What will they be entitled to? What is their burden of proof to establish causation? Meaning, it's the injured worker's burden at all times to prove where they got it from, because the very first line of defense of the employer and the insurance company is simply going to be, well, how do we know you got the virus at work? So what we're hoping for is that there's some statutory provision which makes it a presumption, or it eliminates the burden of proof that you have to establish where you contracted the disease. So in other words, if you are in one of these professions and you contract the virus, it is presumed that you contracted it at work. And under the Occupational Disease Act, there are certain types of diseases, silicosis, cancer if you're a firefighter, where the presumption is already built in that you contracted the virus or the disease at work. So right now, it's a case-by-case basis. We're absolutely looking into the cases. Sometimes the analysis boils down to how long were you out of work for? Do you have health insurance? We balance, is it really worth it for you to bring a claim versus is this a long-standing problem for you? Do you have an underlying medical condition that was exacerbated? Will you have lung issues in the future? So there's a lot of moving parts, but we're on it. We're looking at it closely. And just like this virus has developed and policies have developed, I think our plan of action against these COVID-19 claims will develop.
Do you think that legislation, well, how long do you think it will take to actually bring that legislation to fruition?
Yeah, I think it has to be fast. And I saw a piece of legislation that was floating around, and I'm sorry I don't have it for the listeners right now. I did see it. I know it's being actively worked on. How far it gets, I don't know. I am sure there are insurance and industry groups that will push back against it. But if it doesn't happen soon, then it's sort of the teeth and the effectiveness, it's not there.
So having said that, when how much weight does, the governor or the government determining which is an essential workplace and which is not, how much weight will that impact the law itself? And, let's face it, you're dealing with them on a daily basis. How much does it factor in right now?
I think it does, maybe not so much for workers' comp, but more for labor and employment type issues, because I've received a number of phone calls for people that are still working who don't want to be working but have to be working because their employer tells them they are essential workers. And it could be somebody who worked in, look what happened at the Smithfield and the JBS meat factories. These people, many of whom I've represented over the years, they tend to be immigrant workers. Nobody wants to work in these slaughterhouses. I'm telling you, nobody. But they're there mm-hmm. because of the nation's food supply. and it is a supply chain food supply issue. And they're there working in awful conditions, and I've had people tell me they don't have the personal protective equipment, and they don't want to work. They don't want to be there exposed to this, and they would rather be laid off and have access to the emergency unemployment. But they're stuck at work, and they're working in these terrible conditions, and they're scared to death, and they want to know if they are truly an essential worker or how they can not get out of it, but maybe take a pause until things get better. So I think if there were statutes, there was some definition as to who's essential, who's not, I think that would go a long way to mollifying some of the concerns of those type of employees. But I don't necessarily think it's going to have an impact on the workers' compensation case overall. I think there may be some issues where an employer has work available, they claim it's essential, perhaps somebody's hurt and they get offered a job to come back, then the issue is going to be, is it essential or not? Does it violate the governor's order? You know, who knows where it'll go, but any clear definition from the state outlining who's essential and who's not will certainly help.
So, John, you guys, your firm, Pearson Coucher, is a strictly workers' compensation firm, one of the top firms in the region, unlimited experience in representation of injured workers. I can't think of anybody I know that I, you know, that is this question is more appropriate for. And that is this. We have employers talking, you know, it's been going on a long time. And one of the things that's important is we support our employers. We're, you know, we see what's going on out there. Some companies are, and businesses are going down the tubes. They'll never go back into business. And the ones that are out there and that are working, obviously we support them. But there are some issues. And some of those issues, and some of them are accidental, but some of them at this time where individuals are being required to report to work, and maybe it's an essential workplace without the proper masks. I got a call a couple of weeks ago from a nurse who was being made to go to work. Now, you know, I do the union show, and this was not a union workplace, but it was a big hospital. And this nurse was scared to death going to work every day, but she was young enough to where she could fight it. There are individuals that are high risk, and their employer knows it, and they're being required to go to work without the proper, safety equipment. If somebody goes to work and they're being required to go to work, and I know there's an employment issue there. However, when it comes to work comp, typically, except very rarely, you can't sue your employer for a work injury or getting sick when you're at work. That's what workers' compensation is for. However, if it's a completely negligent situation where an employer knows that the worker is high risk, or even if they're not high risk, but they get very sick and have, you know, serious ramifications from this, but they're made to work without the proper equipment, and they're made to work, is there a potential third-party case there?
I think there could be, and if an employer knows, well, first of all, let me back up a second. I bleed injured worker. I'm all in. I drink the Kool-Aid. That's all we do. But for some employers, in defense, I do think policies were slow to be accepted universally, and I think there was just a communication problem from the federal government as to whether PPE was required, not just for healthcare workers, but for the public in general, right? So for weeks, maybe not if a month, we were all going outside without masks, and now they say you need masks, and I'm sure there were employers that mimicked that said, look, you don't need a mask because the president says we don't need a mask, and he's not wearing a mask, so why do you need a mask? And then policies changed. So I think if an employer knows that they are putting an employee in an unsafe condition, and there is case law on this, and it is very rare because most employers don't do that, but you essentially have to prove it's a gross negligence standard, almost like a blatant disregard for the health and welfare of an employee. And if you have those facts that line up, you can certainly breach what is typically the immunity that the employer has against a direct lawsuit from an employee. And if there's enough of them, I am sure there will be lawyers who have put together perhaps not a class action lawsuit, but groups of these lawsuits against certain employers who aren't doing what's right for the employees. And I think there will be OSHA, Occupational Safety Health Administration backed type claims that will be the focus of these unsafe work conditions, just like they used to be back in the, you know, the early 1900s that you and I have talked about, where the whole workers' compensation laws developed from. It's sort of like, you know, we're turning the clock back to those employers who had those mine workers and, you know, the black lung, and that's how OSHA developed. And, you know, shame on the employers that are doing this today. But I think there will be those claims, Joe.
And what changes that are going on in workers' comp right now, you know, because of COVID-19? You know, I think, are there any changes, you know, to any of the situations? I heard something about light duty, and you know, you can't be forced to work light duty at this point. What's going on in workers' comp directly that may have been altered from the norm?
Yeah, I don't have any clients who have been offered light duty during this pandemic. I think obviously when we get back to more normal times, that will open up again. And I think employers will be more generous offering restricted and light duty because things are shut down now. And I think even if it's an essential employer, I don't think they are looking to bring people back to work on restricted or modified duty. I think technology has changed the way we as lawyers practice. I think it has changed the way judges are approaching the management of cases. And I think it may change the way employers in the future handle their employees. I think if an employer was smart, they would have an employee perform light duty from home. Even if somebody, let's say, works in a supermarket, I am sure there's an employer that could drop off or email the injured worker lists of things to review and check off and manage from home. And maybe it won't be the smoothest of transitions, but like I said in the beginning, employers, lawyers, judges, injured workers, healthcare providers, everybody is changing with the paradigm. And if you don't, I think you're going to see a problem, maybe not in the near future, but a year from now, 2 years from now, as everybody is taking steps forward, figure out how to navigate through these new times, we all have to navigate with it.
Mark, having said that, there's been some. Obviously, you guys have adapted technology with the telemedicine. What changes in your department in rehabilitation do you foresee as sticking around in regards to telemedicine? I mean, a lot of new ways of doing of treatment and applying, you know, medical information that you've obviously been relegated to at times here. But some of those things have worked out incredibly well. what you foresee sticking around after this thing is over.
Sure. Good question, Joe. Telemedicine's great. I mean, the fact that a patient doesn't have to drive to a facility, that they could be in the comfort of their own home, see a doctor. Doctor can look at them through a visual, through either a telephone or a computer, and they can, you know, virtually talk back and forth with each other. Really is a good thing. It's just easier all the way around for the patient. However, there are certain things that cannot be accomplished through telemedicine. We will use that and continue to use that, but there's certain things we're just going to have to see the patient for. We can't get a true blood pressure. We can't get true monitoring of their vitals. We can't give them physical therapy. We can give them what's called HEP, home exercise programs, but we can't work with them with a physical therapist or a chiropractor or a physician to actually do hands-on work with them. That's the one thing we can't do, and I don't know how that'll ever change. But it does help, and I think more from what we've seen dealing with the attorneys is that the attorneys, I've spoken to a lot of attorneys from that side, they're going to be able to do a lot of this over the telephone now and through virtual type things where we've even spoke to attorneys where they may not even need as much office space, where an attorney may not need to come to his office every day. He can work out of his home. He can go to court. He can do depositions, basically from his house or just going straight to a doctor's office or wherever he may need to be. So I think it's more beneficial from that point from an attorney side than it's from physicians, but it will be beneficial for us as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so if I can just jump in, I did want to say that I've been to Weinerman Pain and Wellness, and I have, as Mark has described, their layout is actually beautifully designed, and I'm sure they didn't design it with the thought that there would be a future pandemic, but because of the way it is set up, almost like pods and stations, there is a built-in natural segregation, and you know, I have no problem with my clients going there because I know the way it looks, and patient safety is almost built into the way that the floor layout is designed. And you know, Mark's comment that he just made about how things could change, I agree. Lawyers may not need office space. I do think people will get back to doctors. I've had clients examined over telemedicine, and a doctor can certainly say, let's put you through range of motion. I want you to touch this part and tell me if it hurts. I want you to do this. I want you to do that. And you can get a sense from those reports and exams as to what's wrong. But to Mark's point, you know, patients will need to get back to the doctor. We will need, as a society, to start living the way we lived before. I'm not saying to dive in at once. Maybe there'll be a slow integration. But patients will get back to the doctor's office, and we will get back into court physically, and I will be able to shake a client's hand and give them a high five when their case is over. We'll get there, but we have to take baby steps to get there.
Absolutely. And before we got a couple minutes left, Max, John, do me a favor, give your contact information out to the listener, because I'm sure there's lots of people out there that are interested in the information you provided, if you would.
Yeah, Joe, I am Jonathan Coucher. The firm is Pearson Coucher Law, 1650 Arch Street, Suite 2501, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, 19103. We have offices in Center City, Philadelphia, and Bethlehem in the Lehigh Valley. The office number is 215-627-0700.
And Mark, if you would give you the contact information at Weinerman Pain and Wellness.
Sure. My name is Mark Levithan. I am the practice manager at Weinerman Pain and Wellness. Our location is 1617 JFK Boulevard. That's One Penn Center, Suite 1100. We're right above Suburban Station. And you can reach us at 215-988-9503 for any of your medical needs.
And, John, if you would, we got about 30 seconds. Words of wisdom out there to the people who are listening, whether they're injured or not. If you would, you know, let me hear some words of wisdom for them.
Sure. Just stay calm, stay safe, stay inside. We will get through this. Your case is important, but not as important as your overall health and well-being. We are here. We are listening. We will fight side by side with you. And there will be better times ahead.
Well said. On behalf of Mark Levinson, our sponsor, Reinemann Pain and Wellness, I'm Joe Dougherty, who absolutely agrees with what you just said, John Coucher. You know, people should be calm and understand that we'll all get through. We're all in the same boat. I want to thank our listeners for tuning in to the Pearson Coucher Show with our host, John Coucher. Thank you so much for tuning in. On behalf of John and Mark Levinson, I'm Joe Dougherty. Thanks for listening.